Support for the show comes from Atlassian. Whether we're working in or out of the office, every day our teams are reimagining what it means to connect and produce incredible results. Atlassian's remote-friendly software like Jira, Confluence, and Loom help your team work effectively by connecting your entire organization in one shared digital workspace. Because individually, we're great, but together, we're so much better. Learn how to unleash the potential of your team at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com. Atlassian. Support for this episode comes from The Current Report. From data privacy to the future of TV, retail media, and beyond, the world of digital marketing is constantly in flux. So how can you keep up? Well, The Current Report is there for you. Each week, marketing leaders on the cutting edge give you the latest insight. So if it's creating a buzz, they'll be talking about it. Subscribe to The Current Report wherever you get your podcasts. Hi, everyone. This is Pivot from New York Magazine and the Vox Media Podcast Network. I'm Kara Swisher.
And Kara, I've officially cemented my status as a boomer.
No, you, what have you done?
It's not
easy. We have
easy.
A lot to talk about, Scott.
It's not easy to offend every constituency
really,
with a tweet, Kara. It's not easy to do that.
Scott, you offended me. You offended
really?
Many people. Yes,
well,
we will talk about it. We will talk about
you
it.
And the,
it's also the wrong take. That's the worst part about it. It's the wrong take, which we can debate in a second when we get to the big story. Scott did a tweet.
I do that all the time, by the way.
Scott did a tweet that many people did not like, and we will discuss it when we talk about the big story soon. But Scott,
yeah.
You're getting beat up on the Twitter.
I am. You know,
honestly,
it's good for me every once in a while, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. When's the last time this happened?
Oh, gosh. It's been at least, let me think, 24 hours. Are
yeah,
we talking about my home life or Twitter? What are we talking
Twitter,
about?
Twitter. Yeah. Twitter.
No, I got, yeah. I've gotten a bunch of, occasionally I just
yeah.
combine. Well,
I've
yeah.
gotten a bunch. Rebecca's yeah. gotten a bunch. We've all gotten a
yeah,
bunch. Let me
just
tell
part
you.
Part of it, just, right?
It's we're going to get to it in a minute, but let me just give you a basic rule of life. Women are not the reason men are bad, okay? Let's just.
Well, okay, hold on.
No, we're not arguing
you
right now.
You saying that. Well, you can't get away with that. You saying that somehow implies that I intimated that, which I
didn't. Understand that. So I want you to explain yourself, and you're going to do that in full.
No, explain yourself.
I think a lot of people came
that women
away.
Are responsible.
Yes,
or,
but people implicitly came away with that idea. I got dozens and dozens of texts about it. So if everyone and me thought that same thing, we can talk about it, which is the problem with Twitter in general, which we will discuss. I think okay. you didn't mean to say it that way, but how people hear things, especially in this highly...
No, my dad always said, communication is with the listener.
Exactly. So anyway, let me just talk about Twitter, by the way. Speaking
okay.
of this idea of misinformation, then we will get to the big story, because
yep.
actually GameStop, I think your take on it is inaccurate, but we will discuss it and debate it. But Twitter has launched a new crowdsourced tool called Birdwatch to regulate misinformation on the platform. It will give a few select users access to the tool to flag information and give more context, much like Wikipedia. Oh no.
Yeah.
Is this a good move for Twitter? Too little, too late? You know, you have been on Twitter and you've been doing a lot of research on the platform, and including how badly its stock has been doing compared to many others and how many opportunities it has missed. But what do you think of this crowdsourced tool? I'm like, why do we have to do their work for them? That's what I thought.
Well,
I would flip this
back to you with one question, and that is,
okay.
is this an interesting tool that leverages technology to make the platform a less toxic place, or is it kind of the typical big tech, we want to abdicate responsibility and give it to somebody
yeah.
else so we don't have to take responsibility like every editor, every producer, and every other media company takes. What's your take on this?
Well, it's interesting because I just, as you know, interviewed the CEO of Parler, who gave that, had this weird jury system of five people that are in a pool and they all decide up and down on things. And obviously there's the controversy around Facebook's oversight board, which is taking the big questions off of the table of Mark Zuckerberg. I agree with you. This is so big, it's going to be really hard to figure out how to correctly, and I hate to use the term police, but moderate these platforms in the best way possible. And any tool is welcome. But this idea of crowdsourcing stuff, and I know it works sometimes, but Wikipedia has all kinds of big, giant holes people drive through and abuse. It's hard to check. It's just, ultimately, when someone asks me what to do, is I don't think you can do anything given the way these platforms are built. They are not controlled in any way. And with everybody flowing over them, you're going to miss, you know, a lot of the problem. And so I don't know. I just am like, oh, all right. Here's everybody else sort of telling on each other, and it might work in general, but, and Wikipedia sort of works, right? I mean, a lot of people rely on it, and in a lot of cases, it's good. In other cases, there's issues. And so I'm not sure. I honestly, I don't know if this can be fixed, because humanity just never stops lying, essentially.
Well, the issue is Twitter doesn't lack from a Guardians of Gotcha. Mm-hmm. And so there's a self-policing mechanism that is actually part of the toxicity, because I think a lot of this is nothing but a head fake around what they should and could do, and that is identity. Right. And they fall back to this purist journalistic viewpoint. Well, what about the anonymous Twitter feed that a female journalist in the Gulf needs? And I'm like, there's got to be a way we can figure out
yes.
such that legitimate people with legitimate issues that have real threats to their person can be anonymous without having trolls and bots create a level yep. of toxicity and elevate content that is bad for the Commonwealth and just generally just kind of digital exhaust. So, mm-hmm. but they don't want to move to the more obvious, more effective solution, because it would reduce
money. And they don't have the ability to do so. And, you know, as we'll get to in a minute, Reddit is the same thing. I think Alex Stamos made the point, is they don't yeah. have the systems in place to figure out who's lying and who's not and who's gaming it and who's not. And that, you're right, anonymity is a real problem for these platforms. And the other part is that people do catch each other and check each other, but it's mostly on opinion. I don't like your opinion. I don't like as you just experienced, but that's what really happens more than factual stuff. And then it becomes an argument over factual stuff. Like, no, that's not what happened. No, the election fraud. So I think it just gets into this. It's become such an opinionated space. It's very hard to do fact-checking on the platform that's not done by a larger source that just makes the determination rather than a group of people. And I just heard this from the Parler guy, and he got in so much trouble for the idea that he didn't have any control over his platform and didn't seem to care and took no responsibility for it. And so, and put in a system that wasn't scalable and wasn't quick, you know?
But so my understanding of LinkedIn is they kind of pretty much verify your identity.
Yeah.
And I don't think lying is even really the biggest problem or toxicity. It's that the amount of lying and toxicity, that not taking responsibility for your comments.
Yeah. Yeah.
Leads to.
Yeah, you're right. Anonymous.
And when somebody comes on and says, you know, this is a bad take and you lose a lot of credibility here. Mm-hmm. If someone's identity is there and they really think that, then fine, have at it. I get it. And if someone right. has a bad take on something, fine, own it. But when you don't really know their intentions, you don't know if they're trying to undermine credibility because they don't like your take on something else. You don't know their motives. You don't know if they're just there to create dissent and argument and fracture
yeah.
our society. I think identity solves a lot of this problem, but that would probably clear out 60% of the accounts, 40%
of the— What do you do about people who don't mind their identity, like Marjorie Taylor Greene, and just lie and put up all kinds of nonsense and toxic, and talk about dangerous nonsense, truly problematic nonsense, where she's just lying? I guess you then remove those players from the system, and who decides?
I don't even think she's the biggest problem, because I think people will weigh in and say you're wrong. I think the bigger problem is the thousands of bots that say, all right, here's the flame we can pour fuel on to divide America. Mm-hmm. And those people don't take responsibility for endorsing or disagreeing with her viewpoint. They just see an opportunity to tear at the fabric of our society and create more rage on the platform. And unfortunately, the algorithm's like that. I think yeah. she has a right to have her take on Twitter. And quite frankly, if it's seditious or mm-hmm. it is so traffics in misinformation that's dangerous that results in harm to people, she should be censored and or expelled. But I think the real problem is you take this crazy, and then you pour so much fuel on it with no repercussions. I think identity is, remember all the throwing up their arms, you can never moderate the mm-hmm. platform. One account gets rid of 72% of a certain type of misinformation.
Right, well, that's according to one study.
They play this, it would be impossible card too often. Mm-hmm. If LinkedIn can figure out a way to have your identity, if Netflix can figure out a way to have your identity, and not violate your rights and make it a healthier, safer platform, then yeah. I think Twitter can do it.
All right. Well, you know, they don't want to do it. It's expensive.
That's right.
All
they
of
don't
them
want
find
to do
it expensive. All right. So that leads us to the big story. amateur investors on Reddit blasted hedge fund managers this week. GameStop, the video game outlet, had a meteoric rise over the past few weeks, mostly driven by a Reddit subpage called Wall Street Bets, although that's in context. A lot of people are doing some reporting. It's a little more complex than the original story had been. But nonetheless, a group of Reddit's Wall Street Bets board have been promoting a number of stocks, hoping to squeeze the short sellers that have been betting against them. These are stocks that short sellers have piled into, by the way. Let's be clear. On one side, short sellers have been over attacking some of these companies. And so the Reddit Wall Street Bets board was pushing back. In one case, I think in GameStop's area, I think it was 136% or something like that. The best known bet has been GameStop, which soared over 10,400% this month. Brian Cohen, the co-founder of Chewy, invested in GameStop last year. His 13% stake in the company is now worth $1.3 billion. I'm sorry, this is not real money in a lot of ways. It is real money, but it's not real money. Now the Reddit, he should sell it if I were him. Now the Reddit group has its eyes on AMC Theaters, BlackBerry, among the other short stocks, all companies that are in distress, really, and have been attacked by short sellers, and their actual core businesses are in distress. AMC stock, nonetheless, already shot up 200%, despite the fact that its recent financial statements have been pretty weak due to the pandemic and other issues around people shifting their watching home. And BlackBerry, I don't even want to go into it. There's such a long book about, there's books about what happened to BlackBerry. So, Scott, let's talk about this. We can talk about your take if you want, but you had a take about this being a bunch of men gone wild, essentially.
Yeah, so let's separate the two. Let's try and understand what is going on here. I'm fascinated, and I'm trying to wrap my head around it, and I'm actually doing, or it'll be out by the time this podcast releases or dropping, I'm doing a podcast with Aswath Damodaran, and my colleague at NYU, who's much smarter about this stuff than I am. But effectively, stocks move for several reasons. And this is, I'm parroting Matt Levine, who I think is fantastic at Bloomberg. And they move on fundamentals. Mm-hmm. So their earnings go up or their growth goes up. Or an activist comes in, as this guy at Chewy did, and says this company's undervalued and it's been hit too hard. Mm-hmm. And it moves up based on some sort of underlying fundamental reason specific to the company relative to its peers. The second reason, and let's be clear, that might have happened when the stock went from 4 to 40. Mm-hmm. It's hard to attach to any fundamental move when the stock goes from 40 to 450 where it opened this morning. So it's probably not fundamentals. And I think even the Redditors would agree with that, the Wall Street Bets guys.
Yeah, they note that. They note that.
Then there's technicals. And that is, if a stock is vastly, has incredible short interest, and for whatever reason it moves up, the people who borrowed stock and have to deliver it back at a certain price want to cover their shorts, and they have to go out and buy more stock, which creates this nitro meets glycerin effect. And the stock runs people through a crowded door, what is referred to as a short squeeze.
Right.
The third thing, or the third and maybe the fourth thing here that's sort of unique to this is that, and this is where I kind of all think, I'm trying to look at the underlying primal reasons why this is happening. Mm-hmm. In 1989, people under the age of 40 had 19% of the nation's wealth. Now they have 9%. Mm-hmm. And I think that a lot of younger people, younger investors, younger cohorts across every professional class are sort of fed up with a construct and a system that always seems to leak wealth from them to quote unquote the establishment run by previous generations. Mm-hmm. And this, to a certain extent, is sort of, I don't want to call it a coordinated attack, but it's a coordinated movement for the stock. Now, this isn't anything, people describe it as a mob, market manipulation. It might be both of those things, but it's no less or more of a mob or market manipulation than what a lot of long and short hedge funds have been doing for a long time.
Let's focus on them, because that is absolutely true. I think it's fair. They've been sort of treated as if they're this group of dummies.
No, they're just better at it. They're just leveraging new mediums. The way Kennedy leveraged TV and quantum trading leverage supercomputing. They're leveraging new platforms. Good for them. The fourth thing, though, and where I think it gets dangerous is that I think it's being described usually by people who don't have identity linked to their accounts as a movement.
Right.
And the problem is, okay, here we are. You've invaded Castle Black. You've taken down the boomer hedge fund. Good for you. You are now running and owning the castle. Is the person next to you going to keep or hold that stock for the movement, or at some point, are they going to decide their own financial security is more important? And just as there was a stampede into this thing, there's a stampede out. And is there a danger that a lot of people who are either in it for the movement or first-time investors get really, really hurt here? Because at some point, as
they're
someone who started—
The bag will be held by someone.
Well, I started, my first job was in Morgan Stanley. I was on the floor of the stock exchange when it melted down in October of 1987. I was 22 years old. The reason I'm somewhat financially secure is because of the markets and stocks. I love stocks. And what my observation, observing the markets for the better part of a quarter century, is that the arc of the attachment to the underlying fundamentals of a company may be curved, but it bends towards, at some point, reattaching to the fundamentals of the stock. Mm-hmm. And we have a company that opened this morning at a valuation greater than Best Buy. GameStop is $6.5 billion. This is actually a company. Equity means ownership and rights to cash flows and present value of growth opportunity. And this is a company that's $6.5 billion, a specialty retailer that is losing money and is in decline because my kids who are obsessed with video games, we've never been in a GameStop because we download everything. And then it opened this morning at a valuation greater than Best Buy, a $60 billion company that is profitable. It's got a greater valuation than Restoration Hardware and Williams-Sonoma combined. Amazing retailers and growth categories. It's got a greater valuation than a mall that we could never get into, specifically Simon Property. So at some point, does the movement or the people who have bought into the movement by people with no identity, does it get crushed? But this is—
Who gets crushed here then? One of the other things—
The guy who bought it at 400.
Yes, right. So let me just say, one of the things they're also talking about now is that there's other players here in these anonymous areas that might be bigger hedge funds trying to screw middle side, because it put a couple of hedge funds out of business, it looks like. And it's, a lot of people feel the hand of one of the sneaky bigger hedge funds.
Oh, there's shit going on here. We're going to find out.
You know what I mean? I think that's
this.
Why the SEC has to. And what happens is, on one hand, this is exciting and it's interesting that the attacks on, look, sometimes short sellers are great. Sometimes they're just as abusive and suck money out of the system and play ridiculous financial games in the same way. But it doesn't mean that it's the way. Nothing here is about the fundamentals of the company. That's one. Two, I think Alex Stamos had a good take. There's tons of really good takes on Twitter, by the way, FYI. Yeah. He said Reddit had some thoughtful policy people thinking through. The Wall Street Bets manipulation of GME is now the best template for how one could monetize an influence operation. Of course, Alex worked for Facebook and he knows that. Reddit has some thoughtful policy people thinking through these issues, but I'm not sure they have a dedicated influence ops focused investigation team like Twitter and Facebook. If they leave WSB up, they will need one. And people are incorrectly reading this as a defense of hedge funds. It is not tax their carried interest as W-2 income. Who do you think is going to be messaging everybody the well-followed channels and lots of Reddit gold to drive the next rally? Of course, Wall Street's going to get in here because they're the greediest of greeds. And so that's one of the issues. And the other one is that... that someone will be left holding this bag. And in a lot of ways, it's the companies. Because right now, GameStop, everyone's like, now they can buy things. I'm like, no one's taking their stock. Not one person will be taking their stock. Or they could get bought. And I'm like, no one will be buying.
No way.
They can't.
No way.
They can't. They have frozen this company in a way that is...
It has nothing to do with the company. People are treating it like cryptocurrency right now.
It's right. Exactly. And so that's what I'm like. There's people working for this company, including AMC Theaters. AMC Theaters got to revive as a business, not as a speculative game for people, whoever they are, whether they're hedge fund people hidden as these people or these people, which I think they're very dedicated. But it gets to that idea of democratization of stock market. And I think, you know, we have had issues with Robinhood and how they do that. But this idea of like, we're not stupid. It's so interesting when you hear, and I'm not comparing with the capital people, but a lot of people who are disgruntled and went to Trump is, no one's hearing us. We will be heard. Mm-hmm. And it has the same sort of tone of, we're tired of Wall Street screwing us. And I think this is part of what happened when the banks didn't get, nobody went to jail in the banking crisis. Nobody went to jail in the mortgage crisis. They're 100% right that this is a silly game, and they're showing, to me, what they're showing is what a silly friggin' game this is. And that Wall Street people tend to win it. The casino tends to win, and what a casino it is. So that's what's going to be interesting. And when they sort of pull it apart and see who was in these things, and how do you make these? So what happens next?
Well, this is really interesting. And first off, so people compared this to Tesla, and I'm like, this is no Tesla, and
well,
I'm not a fan of Tesla.
Well, Elon Musk entered the picture here because he hates short sellers.
But see, that's the problem, is that, okay, so what do we have here? And this goes to,
hates short sellers, and they've gotten killed because of his success.
Yeah, and by the way, in some ways, it's inspiring. They're not doing anything that short sellers and other hedge funds don't do, but their weapons are CNBC and investor relations conferences and going on background and going on message boards, and these guys have just leveraged new tools to better effect. But the problem is, so Tesla goes up 8x, iOmega used to go up. I remember iOmega used to go up 80 or 100% in a day. This has gone up 80-fold mm-hmm. in the last several weeks. And like, I think it's sort of this perfect cocktail of volatility. And the first is you have new mediums that people leverage to coordinate. The second is, and this is where I got in trouble, I think a lot of young men are at home and bored and not attaching to work, not attaching to school, not attaching to relationships. And the young brain is very creative, very risk aggressive, and the young male brain is more prone to a type of addiction called gambling. Mm-hmm. And I think when you put a weapon of mass destruction, specifically a phone with a Robinhood app on it, and then you have really impressive billionaires who they idolize, weigh in.
Chamath Palihapitiya.
And sort of egg them on, and they see everybody making money. Okay, it's fun when you take the castle, spirit of camaraderie, but the problem is now what? And I worry. And they'll say, well, this is an excuse for, okay, your concerns are nothing but another means of not letting a younger generation have access to the same returns that your generation has had. I think that's a fair point. But I do worry that there's a lot of young men and a lot of depression that's going to incur when the quote-unquote righteous invaders here head for the exits, as Chamath did. Chamath sold his stake when mm-hmm. it ran up. He was mm-hmm. in the thing for about, and to be clear, he's donated his proceeds to charity. He's been very open about it. He said he wanted to learn. But this feels to me, I was anxious last night. I imagine, and I'm projecting, mm-hmm. I coach a lot of young men, and I see them spending too much time on their phone trading Bitcoin because they're bored. Mm-hmm. And the young male brain is very prone to addiction, specifically around gambling. And I heard immediately last night from a lot of men who said, I am 35 and married. I just saw this as an interesting way to make money. And your generation has made money like this just with different vehicles. That's a fair point. Mm-hmm. That's a fair point. When the castle, all of a sudden, when the White Walkers of the market show mm-hmm. up and say, okay, we're going to start thinking of this thing as an actual stock and start looking at valuations, the guy, your brother in arms next to you, is going to head for the door. And just be careful. If this thing can go up 80-fold, it can go down 90% in 48 hours. So look, understand your risks. The market is risk. There's incredible learning here. But just understand the risks here.
What an intelligent assessment of this, Mr. Bad Tweeter. Let me just tell you.
But people, what did you not like? So let's dive into this. I have shitty takes all the time, but dive into my shitty take.
It felt like, this is what I read and what a lot of women read, especially, and a lot of people, because I got in line, stopping listening to this show because of Scott, was essentially, he's blaming that they're not getting sex for their incel behavior. You know what I mean? Like, essentially. And I think it's a whole lot more complex than that. And there are elements of addiction here. The issues we talk about around Robinhood, around boredom, which you just intelligently explained, which you cannot do on Twitter. So I think you sort of leaned heavy into it's bored men who aren't getting sex kind of thing. Like, that's what I read. I'm not the only one. So don't try to gaslight me on this.
Wait, Rebecca, you're my focus group. Did you read my tweets? Did you find them offensive?
I did. Mm-hmm. I did.
And how did you interpret it?
You stepped into a trope that we all live in all the time is the problem. I think women always live in a world where we're held accountable for men's behavior, specifically around sex. And here was a moment where you just read it wrong. And I know you personally, and what I appreciate about you is you always come back and you're like, huh, I thought about it and maybe you're right. But you just stepped into our world without thinking about it.
Yeah, yes.
That's fair.
Which that's men fair. Do all the time.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's just that you did what men do all the time. You didn't do something new or outrageous. You just did what men do. Anyways, I wasn't offended because I know you, but I got several text messages from friends that I talk to all but once a year being like, get your boy. What's Scott doing?
FYI, just on GameStop, it opened at 480 this morning.
Yeah.
At 264.
Yep. Of course.
I'm telling you, mm-hmm. so many young men are going to get so fucking smoked in this thing. And they are going to be so
depressed. Hopefully it's just like $100
at a time. That's the thing also, Scott, is I was like, yeah, I totally get what you're saying. I know you and I know your background mm-hmm. with Robinhood and I totally understood where you're coming from, but you stepped into the wrong narrative.
100%. No, I think your analysis is the right one. I just read the room incorrectly.
Yeah.
First off, I think a young bored man is a dangerous human being. And women took that as it's our responsibility to somehow serve as guardrails. Mm-hmm. Most of the young men who I were friends with in college were having sex with other men. So mm-hmm. I don't pin this on women, nor did I say, nor do I say that it's women's obligation.
Right. Okay.
That's a true story.
But it's not about sex. It's about a lot of things.
No, but I stand by this, Kara. Okay.
All right.
Men behave better when they are in the pursuit or they engage in relationships. And sex mm-hmm. is a key component and bridge to a relationship.
Okay. All right.
And there is nothing wrong. And unfortunately, because of the pandemic, both men and women aren't attaching to things, including relationships. Gen Z is having sex later, which quite frankly, I think is a bad thing. 50% of young people are seeing mm-hmm. their friends as much as they used to. That is really dangerous for mental health. And I think it leads to risk aggressive and bad decisions, especially gambling amongst young men. So when I say this is about guys not getting enough sex, it has nothing to do with
it. I'm not saying that women— But you understand why in the world, I get it, but in the shorthand, when it's so complex, this is a complex story where there's lots of things happening, ultimately.
Yeah, but no one bothered to read the next my five tweets. And also, I've done some information on this because I'm desperate for affirmation and very sensitive and a delicate little flower. The majority of the really toxic tweets coming after me are Redditors. Who are some of the same people pumping this thing?
Yeah.
And by the way, you know, if the kind of the
feminist— you're also insulting them. Maybe they are smart. I mean, I think one of the things they're talking about and some of the— I went onto these boards and was reading a lot of them. They're actually super smart research people, I have to say.
Some have great analysis.
And I think they don't want to— they're not stupid.
Yeah, it's not here. Not around GameStop. There is no fundamental analysis that justifies
what's
going on.
But they say that in their— they do say that. And I think ultimately the original idea of these shorts piling on to companies like Tesla or GameStop, and it needs to be stopped. This group of people who are benefiting are sort of vultures on the system, you know, or hyenas on the system. They need to be taken down. Now, I think in the interim, other hedge funds took advantage of that feeling, and they're making bank. I when this all sorts out, I suspect bigger Wall Street firms will have been on both sides of
this. We're going to find out hedge funds were in here on the board pumping it themselves.
Yeah. So it's reminded me of iOmega. That's what happened back then. It turned out there were all kinds of players.
I think they're fighting the wrong city hall. They're stating this as some sort of movement against the young versus the old, and I want to legitimize their rage is warranted. Mm-hmm. But if you think about the alternative investments industry, it's actually quite a young industry. It's quite frankly, it's women of color that should be angry at alternative investments community. There just aren't that many women or that many people of color in this industry. But if you walk into a hedge fund, I work with a lot of them, mm-hmm. it is kids. Mm-hmm. And maybe there's an old white dude's name on the door, but it is mm-hmm. a fairly young industry. And mm-hmm. you're going to find that a lot of those people they claim they're tearing down are in here making money and manipulating this thing. But good for them. I think it is a passing of the baton. I think calling them a mob or saying it's market manipulation, okay, then every short seller and every hedge fund is trying to incite a mob and manipulate the market. They're just better at it. You're just angry because they showed up. And just the way a company that's all short tries to come in and crush a company, and I agree that at some point you're just piling on and making it very difficult for a company.
Yeah,
I don't think
I've
ever—
You can't figure out what this is going on here in a lot of ways.
We're going to find out a lot here.
Yes, of course. What should the SEC do? Investigate, right? They were saying they just got their jobs. They just literally were moving in their offices and setting up their pens and papers and stuff like that.
So this goes to my prediction.
By the way, the last SEC commissioner, may I just say, was known for taking the brakes off way too much in terms of enforcement.
Doubt.
And that guy has done all kinds of 10 or 12 things that has led to this ability to what has happened here. And by the way, I'm not for the old system at all, necessarily. Yeah. It's just that there's been, as usual in the Trump administration, not much watch in the store kind of stuff.
Yeah, and there's two key issues here that the SEC needs to weigh thoughtfully. The first is, do retail investors end up being the ones with no seat to sit in that bought in at $400 because they saw people they admire, they saw this thing going up, and get unnaturally hurt through market manipulation? And at the same time, that argument has been used to preclude or inhibit smaller investors from investing in better opportunities. Accredited investors, okay, so you're saying only rich people have access to these types of investments. So there's two sides of that story. The other thing is, does this type of coordinated activity introduce so much systemic risk into the system that it creates a threat to markets, which are really important in terms of capital formation, investing, saving. But whatever they do, they're going to have to do it on both sides of the wall here. If they want to go after the Redditors, they've got to go after the short funds and the long funds. They're going to if they think there's too much market volatility or systemic risk, then they're going to have to say, okay, well, everyone's involved in this. And I just don't think they're going to be able to, nor should they, go after these folks and pretend that they're any more or less guilty of anyone else that has been playing the system, whether it's through supercomputers or coordinated.
What's Reddit's responsibility here?
I think Reddit, I'll pivot back to you. My gut is that Reddit is trying to be thoughtful around
this. They are.
They
have been, I have to say.
And trying to thread a needle with a tiny, tiny eye.
Yeah, he has talked to me about that. Steve Huffman, the CEO, is like, we don't have the amount of time to, or the staff and money to moderate as much, even though they did a whole lot more. They talk about a company that's tried very hard to control itself compared to the bigger companies, but they certainly don't have the resources to do that. And so it'll be really hard for them to really bring in, they'll have to shut down some things they may not want to shut down. And then people get all mad at them as usual. And in this case, instead of things where they shut down, which were racist and sexist, in this case, everyone's like, you're shutting down our financial future kind of thing. So it should be, it's a really interesting moment right now for these things. But it's interesting. The last thing, Scott, is media and their focus on it. I think a lot of the media takes initially treating this group like a bunch of dummies was just, I really didn't like, and defending hedge funds who are so, would like sell their mama for, $5, essentially, a lot of these people. So what do you imagine, what do you think about the media and their role?
So just, I'm name dropping and doing real time here, but I just got a call from Stephanie Ruhle, and she just texted me to be mindful of this. And I want to disclose, I'm an investor in Public, which is a competitor.
Right. That's what I was
going to
ask you about. Yep.
And
interesting,
I disclosed it on this
change.
Show.
Yep.
I invested in them after I went on a rail against Robinhood.
You did.
And they reached out and they said, we are not allowing margin. We are not allowing options. We are about education. I'm going on a live stream.
It's a community.
Them.
It's also a community investment.
40% are women. Right. It's people of color. They're taking a different approach, and I wanted to be supportive. I also think it's an opportunity. I like the space. I like online trading. I just think that there's toxicity that one player specifically is ignoring. But Stephanie just texted me, you need to be careful of this. So thank you, Stephanie, and I want to disclose it over and over. Mm-hmm. I'm an investor in Public, which I think is the good side.
Mm-hmm. All right. So the media, last question, then we have
to go on to our
next thing. So what is the media's role in this? Because I think they kind of did this sort of broad brush, because I had like normal people say, explain this to me, Kara. Like everyone got interested in this story and it was painted as sort of this weird attack on Wall Street. And I'm not so sure that's what happened here exactly.
This narrative is
very complicated.
This is nothing different than it's been going on from traditional players. They're just as, like I said, Churchill used radio. They're using a new medium, and good for them. In some ways, it's very inspiring. The question is, on both sides of the traditional guys, the short sellers, the people, the long guys who use bots or go to investment conferences, at some point, are there certain regulations? So for example, when I was an activist investor, if you ever coordinated with someone in your group that you're coordinating with amounted to more than 5% of the outstanding stock, you had to disclose who you were and what your intentions were. Mm-hmm. So at some point, when does a community of people officially be coordinating?
Yeah.
But the SEC's got to be
really
very
hard.
Careful
yeah.
not to be seen. So quite frankly, I've always felt the SEC is not protecting investors, they're protecting management. They put in place all this regulations that makes it hard to kick directors out of a company, to kick management out of a company. And the SEC can't be seen as someone who is just protecting the establishment of old white guys and not letting people under the age of 40 weigh in and do the same thing, same thing that long and shorts do, but just do it better.
Right.
But we're going to find out that the people that they think they're invading the castle and hanging are many of the ones in there pumping it and making money right
now. It should be interesting.
And the warning I got to give to people, and you're big boys and big girls, and there's not only learning about investing, there's life lessons around sometimes losing money. If you're in this thing at a valuation that is impossible to justify around a specialty retailer of this size, just keep in mind you are speculating. And you're not even just gambling, because gambling, if I get up from the table at blackjack, the other people don't get hurt. And when you gamble, you sort of know, okay, this is consumption and maybe you have a problem, maybe you don't. But just be mindful, I would say to the retail investors, especially first-time investors, when you buy a specialty retailer at 8x revenues that is losing money, at some point when it reattaches to fundamentals, it's not going to be likely trading at $450 a share. Just be mindful of that. You're a grown-up, make your own decisions.
Right.
And the SEC has to be careful not to be seen as just favoring the establishment.
Yeah. Well, Scott, that was an intelligent take. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. And I'm glad we have this. I have this effect on you. Are you ignoring me?
No, I'm sorry. I'm with my other favorite person, Stephanie Ruhle,
who's
berating me right now.
She should. Thank you, Stephanie. Give him a hard time. She can't hear
me. No, she's like, be careful. Tucker Carlson is going to eat your face. And I'm like, wait, you're talking about sex now? What's going on here?
Oh my God. You do not get any rude penis remarks to make. You're completely out of them. Focus on me over here. Look up, eyes up.
And don't text me late at night and be angry at me. It upsets me.
Oh my God, really?
It upsets me. Ugh, stop that.
You know what? You're like a kid that like makes a big mess and then you're like, how dare you note my big mess? No, I'm not even good.
Love me, don't judge
no,
me.
No, listen, let me tell you. Literally told people you're a big boy. You're a big boy,
love
Scott
me.
Galloway. You're a big boy. You can take it. Anyway, Stephanie Ruhle, I will text you at 7 a.m. next time and call you an asshole. All right, Scott, let's go on a quick break. When we come back, we'll talk about the changes in Google's Political Action Committee funding and a listener mail question.
Fox Creative.
This is advertiser content from Atlassian.
It's important that we don't try to use an understanding of productivity from the industrial era when people were sitting shoulder to shoulder in a factory setting. When employees are designing their workdays around their most important work, not just reacting to messages and attending meetings, they're more productive.
That's Annie Dean, global head of Team Anywhere at Atlassian. She's leading the mission to empower her 11,000 plus teammates to work from, well, anywhere.
The office isn't dead. It's just not the solution to effective teamwork. Without Team Anywhere, we would probably need about double the amount of office space we have today. And that translates into meaningful annual savings that we can invest in other key company priorities.
Those savings get invested in creating the technology for Atlassian customers like Jira, Loom, and Confluence.
We believe that this is a more human way to work, and that's something that should be celebrated. One of my favorite things is when 3 o'clock rolls around and my two boys come home from school and they both know that they're allowed to interrupt my meeting to give me a kiss. That's something that I never got when I was in the office every single day.
Learn how Atlassian software helps power global collaboration for all teams so they can accomplish everything that's impossible alone at Atlassian.com. That's Atlassian.com.
In a lot of ways, the leader of Canada is not like the leader of the United States. Justin is 52, Joe is 81, but the two do share some struggles. Trudeau's been in office for a while, he's being challenged by a conservative populist, and he's struggling in the polls, especially with young people. But now, he's got a plan to fix it, all of it.
Among the $52.9 billion in new spending,
proposing a $23 billion program to get nearly 4 million homes built between now and 2031.
He's got a budget that speaks directly to millennials and Gen Z, or Gen Z as he calls them, and he's hoping it'll keep populism at bay in Canada too. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau is going to join us on Today Explained to tell us all about it. Today Explained, Vox's daily news podcast, Monday through Friday in your feeds.
Okay, Scott, we're back. Pay attention. Google's Political Action Committee will stop funding its members of Congress who voted against the presidential election results. Google's PAC donated to Senator Ted Cruz's Senate campaign in 2017 and 2018. Earlier this month, tech companies including Amazon, Facebook, Google, and Microsoft said they'd be pausing contributions for their political action committees in the wake of the insurrection at the Capitol. Meanwhile, this week, a group of congressional Democrats sent a letter to the CEOs of some of the major social media platforms saying that, quote, violent insurrectionist mob was radicalized specialized in part in the digital echo chamber that your company designed, built, and maintained, which Kara Swisher has been saying for a long time. They're calling for a fundamental reexamination of the way these algorithms work, which I think there's going to be a lot of pushes around that. So what do you think about, I think money's the big thing. I think a lot of the Republicans who know about this are worried about the situation. They're not going to be able to raise enough, you know, grassroots money, especially when they rely on all of these corporations. Although I think the corporations will be back quietly.
Look, as Citizens United and Money in Politics really is an enormous problem. And I've never bought into the notion that money is speech. And what we have is, if you look at the presidential campaign, just 400 families were responsible for 50% of the donations.
Yeah.
And then you speedball that influence with think tanks, PACs, the major media companies in this nation are owned by a handful of families. And what do you know? The 1%, the shareholder class, the establishment has just too much influence over our politics. And we end up with an anemic response to the pandemic because of people being really damaged by this pandemic. And an insurrection. And what do you know, that 1 in 5 households with children are food insecure because the people who control the government aren't those households. Money in politics is really a cancer. And so is the hardening of our districts and gerrymandering. But there's something's got to give around money and politics. And this is just, okay, all this is our side is winning right now. You know, the Republicans said, well, money is voice when they were getting, Microsoft basically learned from the sins of the father, and that is Ballmer and Gates refused to play the game in the 90s. Mm-hmm. And what do you know? The DOJ weighed in and broke them up.
Yeah.
And then they learned from that. And basically all the big tech guys now, their fastest growing expense line isn't R&D.
Lobbying.
It isn't AI. It's lobbying. Mm-hmm. Because they learned, guess what? Marco Rubio is coin operated.
Yeah.
You insert a quarter into Marco Rubio and say, hey, we want for-profit education that preys on the hopes and dreams of lower income adults. And all of a sudden, he'll start talking about how important education. I mean, there are too many coin-operated politicians because 97% of the people who win office are the ones who raise the most money.
Right.
And whether it's matching funds, similar to what they do in New York, whether it's what they do in Europe, where you get to a certain amount of signatures, you're guaranteed a certain amount of fund. And then guess what? You know what you have to win on? You have to win on your fucking ideas, boss.
Yeah.
And your willingness to go shake hands at Rotary Club meetings, money and politics. Something's got to give, Kara.
Professor Galloway goes to Washington. This is such a nice movie.
That'll happen. That'll happen. No, have you seen Twitter today?
Yes,
Jesus,
I have.
Jesus,
do you think anything that happens to you doesn't happen to me? Like, hello. Like, hello. I get this. How can you talk to this man? I was like, I can talk to this man.
How can you?
I know.
Do you tell him because I'm dreaming?
I literally.
Because he's dreaming.
Of course I can't go, he's an idiot on Twitter. I can't do that because you get all mad. So I'm caught in a.
Well, that's an option. You were contemplating that?
I was. I was like, this time, he deserves a Twitter smack, but I didn't do it.
I want you to be.
I didn't do it.
That's why I want my co-host and Pivot to be another guardian of gotcha. I want you to join the feminists who take a tweet as the entirety of your view on everything.
I controlled myself. I controlled myself. I'm sorry, people of Twitter. I'm controlled myself because I knew I could knock a better insight out of him on this show. Nonetheless, on this issue, I don't think they'll stick with it. It's sort of like the advertisers who left Facebook. The people who left Facebook and then came probably are back now and did this sort of high dudgeon thing. I do think they should commit to never giving people who voted for against the election results any money. They should do something like that. Like, we're never giving Ted Cruz.
They have crossed the line.
That's what I would say. We're never giving them. Not we're maybe going to give them. We're never giving them.
Well, the Lincoln Project is going after Microsoft saying, look, you can't give money to seditionists. And I think, look, if you want to play this game where money is speech.
I'm talking to Microsoft about that.
So I'm sorry?
I'm talking to Microsoft, Brad Smith, hopefully, about that soon. He's the one that talked about it. He was being honest. He was saying, this is what we do. We buy influence.
This is the game. This is the game.
I don't think he was saying anything surprising.
Yeah.
I think they should commit. Okay, here we go. Amazon, Facebook, Google, Microsoft, commit to never, don't pause your contributions. End your contributions to anyone who voted for this. It just says something. It says something. And let the chips fall where they may. That's all. Give money to people who don't vote for insurrection. It'll be interesting to see on the impeachment thing, you know, what those votes are. It looks like those senators have now decided they're going to give Trump a pass on that. which of course they were. What a
shocker.
Don't
they do just 51, though, to make sure he doesn't run again?
No, they have to first pass the impeachment, and then they can patch the second one. So, no, I think it's interesting because a lot of these people would dearly love Trump not to be a factor in the 2024
Cruz
election.
And Rubio.
Yeah.
I mean, everything they do is pose for the cameras for the Iowa Des Moines Register.
Prediction before this is over. Yeah. Those two are never going to be president. Never, ever, ever, ever. Both of them.
Careful what you say about who can never be president.
They're never going to be president. These two, no, because here's the thing. I got the whole appeal of
Donald
Trump.
You saw Trump. I will give you this. You saw Trump. You were able to put your feelings aside and objectively evaluate Trump.
Yep. Let me just say, these two, and I'm going to use a term they used against women, Hillary Clinton, they're not even likable enough, either of them. They're not likable. And people do not vote for not likable people. And both of them, Ted Cruz is the most not likable, but Marco Rubio, not in a million years is he appealing in any way as a candidate. I think Tucker Carlson is in a lot of ways, even though he offends most of my sensibilities.
I think he's very handsome.
He's very clever. He's very
smart guy.
I can see people liking him, and Ted Cruz, Marco Rubio, nobody likes you. So
what I'm thinking about? You're talking about money in politics.
Yeah.
I'm actually thinking about making a donation to the Trump in 2022 campaign for Ivanka to run against Senator Rubio. I would just love to see it.
No.
Come on. That would be fun.
No. Ivanka you live
Trump
there. You can enjoy yourself.
Against Marco
can
Rubio.
I just say Florida?
That would be so Florida.
That
would be so on brand for us.
Speaking of Florida, and we're going to go to listener mail section.
Olympics. The Olympics are coming to Florida.
I don't care about that. I have been trying to get my mom a vaccine there. Your system is so screwed in Florida. Now, she's going to have to fly to New York where she is on a list that is much more organized. The DC list is really organized. I feel like I can reach them. I can look at all the information. Florida, it took me like hours. They had shitty websites. Shitty information.
Awful. Yeah.
On the phone with them. Let me just say, Governor DeSantis, you suck in terms of.
Here's where we are, and it speaks to a larger problem.
I don't care if you don't have enough of them. Your systems suck. Even if you're telling me no, you're not explaining how I can get on a list.
But this is part of a 40-year screed started by Reagan, where government is incompetent, so let's defund them. Which leads to a self-fulfilling prophecy about ineffective government. And this whole notion that we're going to decentralize everything and leave it up to the hospitals is nothing but similar to Facebook abdicating responsibility. And Governor DeSantis is, this big, we're going to let the hospitals figure out the vaccination websites. You know what? We need scale. We need the federal government. The federal government is really good at some things. They are really good at defending our borders. They are really good in ensuring that you can't segregate schools. The federal government is outstanding at a lot of things.
Yeah,
and guess what?
It needs to be federalized.
This needs to be federalized.
Yeah, it's so you can fill out a form to get an I can get a ginger ale during this show from Amazon right now. Come on, we know how to do this. And now every single county is making its own list system. This is just astonishing. And by the way, and Florida in particular, you wasted 5 hours of my life last night and I still wasn't able to figure out anyway, thank you.
Come down to Miami, let us make it up to you.
No, I'm not.
Down to Miami.
No, not coming to Florida. Anyway, we're going to discuss the algorithms. We've got to move on, but asking these companies to readjust their algorithms, we'll see about that.
You know who you would love?
We'll see about that. What?
The new mayor of Miami.
I have talked to him. He texts me all the time. I did a little column I quoted him in.
He's good.
Francisco Suarez, right?
Mayor Suarez. He wants us, by the way.
He's very eager.
Mayor Suarez
texting in the middle of the night, he texts them.
Yeah, he's like all over you.
He wants the jungle cat
and the dog to host an event in Miami.
Yeah, perhaps we will.
Perhaps. Bring your sunblock.
If they don't give my mother a vaccine, no, they can't. I'm not coming down there. God, I don't want them to help her.
I didn't know your mom. Did I know your mom was in Florida?
She's in Vero Beach. Just don't drive around in your car nearby. She has a car, so that's even. Just stay away.
I've met Lucky. That's not a car. It's a weapon.
Anyway, all right. So we're going to move on and take a listener mail question. Let's go.
You've got.
I can't believe I'm going to be a mailman.
You've got mail.
Hey, Karen, Scott. This is William calling from Connecticut. I'm a recent college graduate who has found themselves unemployed due to the pandemic. I'm viewing this as a time to reinvent myself and maybe dive into something new. If you were in my shoes, what industry or sector of the economy would you choose to start a new career in? Something that has large potential upside and will be prevalent for years to come. Thank you.
Interesting. I'm going to answer this first because I am teaching a course at University of Chicago, and I just last night talked to a dozen students. Yes.
Hold the phone. University of Chicago?
Kara Swisher? I'm a professor. I'm Professor Kara Swisher.
Are you lecturing or are you an adjunct? What's the deal there?
I am in a fellowship that David Axelrod at the politics. I'm with Tim Alberta, Will Hurd, Representative Hurd, Heidi Heidkamp. And we're all fellows in this. Yes, it's very fancy. We're doing it. I should have been in Chicago, but because I love Chicago.
Institution.
But we cannot go. So it is via virtual. And they have these office hours where I talk to students literally on a Zoom for 20 minutes each. All of them were asking this question. So I'm going to answer this first.
Yeah.
Climate change tech. Thank you. Climate change or food tech? That's where I would go into. It's a really interesting area. It's highly competitive in terms of there's going to be lots of companies in here. And I would focus on investing in climate change, figuring out the problems, whether it's things like cleaning up the mess, like carbon capture or solar, that's where I would head. I think that's obviously the Biden administration's putting a lot of money into it. Sheldon Whitehouse stopped doing his speeches now because he feels like we're on a better track. I feel like that is an area of great promise. Thank you. All right, Scott, you do it because you're an actual professor.
My office hours, kids don't come to talk about brand strategy or strategy. They come basically to ask this question over and over. I think the most exciting areas, I agree with you, those are both great areas. I personally think that the greatest opportunity or the reshuffling of stakeholder capital will be in the largest part of our economy, and that's healthcare. Mm-hmm. And we're about to see 17% of our GDP dispersed from doctors' offices and hospitals to homes. And it's not only a fantastic opportunity economically, it's an opportunity to take primary care and push it out to people who end up in the emergency room because they're underinsured or intimidated. A woman who has a child that suffers from diabetes spends 12 weeks of her life every year managing that child's diabetes. And let's be honest, it's almost always the mom. Most of that time is spent commuting to and from the doctor's office and then waiting in the waiting room of some specialist. So it's not only a huge opportunity, you're going to see $3 trillion reallocated away from the medical industrial complex. So get in between healthcare and technology. My industry, EdTech, $750 billion in the U.S., a couple trillion dollars. It's not sustainable. There's no reason that kids should be paying $7,000 to take my course. 280 kids, that's $2 million for 12 nights of this. And think about it. All you have to endure is an ad from ZipRecruiter. What a deal. But ed tech is huge. Also, just some lifestyle stuff. Get to a city. Give up on the myth of balance. Work your ass off. Invest in relationships, see opportunities to help other people as an opportunity. And also, Kara, spend less time on your phone and have more sex, specifically attached to a relationship. Attached to a relationship.
All right, just don't call them incels. They're not incels.
When did incels become a special interest group?
I'll show you. I'm going to send you.
Where were you when I was 19? I didn't realize I needed protecting and was deserving of carrots. I didn't know I was a thing.
As usual, typical white man is like, make a mistake and then get defensive. My son did this last night. Same thing. He wasn't supposed to be at my house for dinner. He was supposed to be at my ex's house. And so I work late. And then I get home. He's like, why aren't you here? Because he had told me that morning he wasn't going to be there. And I was like, but you told me you wasn't. And then he was mad at me for something he did. I am so good at dealing with men who do this, who displace their anger. So don't even.
My angers are embers that actually inspire a lot of professional insight. I'm so upset I'm not more successful that I try to be. I think anger is actually very motivating.
It's not actually not anger that you all have, by the way. It's insecurity and that you, where is mom in the case of my sons? And in your case, where is Kara to slap the bejesus out of me? Yes.
Angry, insecure men, i.e. men. What do you mean?
No, but
why
it's
do you
insecurity.
Say, those men you, that have testicles. Yeah, that's a bit redundant,
most
isn't it?
People,
insecure, angry men.
Not everybody. With many people, it's because they're insecure. And that's where rudeness or anger comes out of, or say, unfortunate
I hate myself
tweets.
Less and less every day.
Do you know what?
Kara.
I'm glad that Stephanie Ruhle was attacking you, too.
Yeah, she's like, now she's coming
she's
at
worse.
Me. What's the deal?
She's,
but it's out of affection.
Perhaps
it's out
you
of
deserve
affection.
It. Perhaps you deserve her. This is someone who cares about you and doesn't want you to drive yourself into a wall.
I
That's
just
perhaps.
Wrote back. I appreciate you looking out for me. I need these guardrails.
Oh
my
no.
God,
oh, no,
how
oh,
inappropriate.
No.
How inappropriate that I'm
do this. I knew you would do this. It's not because she's a woman. It's because she's a badass. Stephanie Ruhle is a badass. And if she's badassing you, I'm good with it. I'm feeling good with it. Anyway, Scott, William from Connecticut, I say climate change check or food.
I say
and
tomato.
Scott says, and the one of the other thing is an unconventional skill we have that you think people should be learning for the market. Just creative thinking, and not learning Chinese. Maybe you could learn Chinese, whatever.
I'm sorry, creative thinking?
Creative
That's
thinking.
That's your advice? Like,
yes, yes. I don't think
That's
people
right
learn
That's
right
up there with Ivanka's advice you know? To just do something different. Creative thinking. Oh, that's actionable.
You mean
that's
Senator?
Helpful. Thank you.
You mean Senator
Thank
Ivanka?
Thank you, Kara.
Oh, my God. She cannot be senator. I'm sorry. I would go down
oh,
there
God,
and like,
I would love that.
Knock
I
doors. Just, say,
welcome
not for
to
Marco
Florida.
Rubio either. Let's find someone else. That maybe you could run.
I think Val Demings would be outstanding, the police commissioner from Orlando.
Oh, yes. Let's get Val Demings. Let's back her. That's who we back to get rid of these two grifters. We need to get rid of the grifters and put in Val Demings. Thank you very much.
I agree.
Anyway, Scott.
Kara.
One more quick break. You have a prediction. So when we get back, you're going to make a quick prediction.
Good.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docuspecial on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
Okay, Scott, prediction time. You have a very short amount of time. What's your prediction?
Okay, we're going to see
all day today. That's my prediction.
We're going to see the SEC and FINRA weigh in here, but they'll weigh in on both sides, and there'll be some sort of regulation or some sort of new guide rules, but it'll impact the existing players recognizing the new guys aren't doing anything different. Yes. I think they'll get that. Two, the more interesting thing is just as Roblox has dispersed creativity past Activision or Blizzard, such that creators have a platform and can build their own games and then let kids decide what games get oxygen, just as TikTok has built a platform such that Jeffrey Katzenberg doesn't decide who the creators